Welcome back in, everyone, to a fantastic new episode of Whisper in the Wings, our continued coverage of the New York City Fringe Festival. We are joined by several more artists and their works, which are performing at this year's festival. This time, we are covering shows that are taking place at the Wild Project. The New York City Fringe Festival runs April 3rd through the 21st, and this year it is at three different venues, at Under St. Mark's, The Wild Project, and 14Y Theater. You can get your tickets and more information by visiting frigid.nyc. And joining us today from the various productions at The Wild Project, we have Caitlin McNeilage, Tanya Gupta, Brigitte Silva, Jorge Perez, Azar Bondi Ali, Hal Cantor, Kate Levitt, Eve Blackwater, and Emily Walsh. They have some wonderful shows to be sharing with you, so let's dive right into it. Everyone, welcome to Whisper in the Wings from Stage Whisper.
Hello.
Hey, hello.
And the choir said amen. No. I'm so happy that all of you are here in this lovely full house that we have, and some great, great shows, which I'm excited to dive into. So could we first have all of you tell us a little bit about your show, starting with Caitlin McNeilage and your show, The Leading Lady Club, a feminist but still likable sketch show.
Hi, yes, thanks so much for having us. So our show, I hope, is a little bit exactly what it sounds like in the title. It's a comedy about womanhood. We took interviews with women from various backgrounds, ages, ethnicities, experiences, and we turned it into a sketch comedy that we kind of pitch as being the Barbie movie meets Saturday Night Live. So it's a lot of fun, very funny, very fast paced, but also has some heavier, deeper moments. And I think it will have something that's relatable to everyone in the show.
And it is wonderful. I love that pitch.
Thank you.
Silva, can you tell us about your show, Delirantes?
Yeah, that's a show that is based, it's an adaptation from a show called Frenzy for Two by Ionescu, a playwright Romanian. And it's during the pandemic, two unmarried, a happy couple dealing through all this lockdown. And it's a dark comedy where they get delirious and they're, everything that is happening outside, it just gets them even worse through its time. I hope everyone feel identified with all those moments that we went through during the pandemic and how funny it could be, how ridiculous it could be, how we were so full of fear and it was just funny.
Fabulous. Azar Bondi Ali, you've got this great show, Curry and Catharsis. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, I'm really excited about this. Curry and Catharsis is a storytelling comedy that, if you imagine, was performed by Walmart version of Hasan Minhaj. The story is about a Indian-American man who discovers his culture, his roots through food and people and jewelry, and then is rejected by the culture because of some old school classism. And so the story is about how that influences his life decisions and how he finds a way to cope with it. The story just tries to laugh his way through talking about some hard stuff. So I'm excited about putting it on.
Very cool. Hal Cantor, you have a great show, The Importance of Being Anxious. Can you tell us about that?
Yes, absolutely. Well, the pitch on it is it's a coming of middle age comedy about coming out really, really, really late, among other anxiety producing triggers and tribulations, which of course could fill out in another entire podcast if I got through all the triggers and tribulations. It's fun. I'm excited to bring it to New York, which I think of as the birthplace of angst. So I'm looking forward to bringing the anxiety to New York City. And thanks for having us on the show here. So,
yeah. Oh, it's my pleasure. And, you know, we could always use more anxiety here in New York
City. Yeah, I don't think we have enough in the world. So I want to bring even more to the fore. Yeah, that's my goal. Yeah.
Hey, Levitt, you have a great show, A Little Bit Pregnant. You want to tell us about that?
Absolutely. Sex, drugs, rock and roll, and a baby? A Little Bit Pregnant is a dramatic comedy with a feminist twist. It's got punchy dialogue, dynamic actors, and characters that feel like they could be your next door neighbors. A Little Bit Pregnant gives audiences an intimate look at the highs and lows of four young people trying to adult.
I love it. Yes, trying to adult. Something we all can relate to, I'm just saying. Steve Blackwater, we're so happy to have you back and to be speaking again on your show, Broke Neck Girls, the murder ballad musical. You want to tell us more about that?
Yes, please. So this is a historically based dark comedy about the sensationalization of murders of women in the 1600s. So we all know how popular true crime podcasts are. And before true crime podcasts, there were tabloids. And before that, way back before that, there were songs that wandering musicians would sing, spreading the news from town to town. So I have a band that does a modern take on these songs about murders from the 1600s. And we took our favorite, most horrifying songs about the most horrifying sensationalized murders, and we put them into a comedic play, which kind of sounds awful, but the awfulness of it is what makes it awesome.
I love it. Yes. And bringing us home, we've got Emily Walsh and her show, Dad Girl.
Yes. And just a quick note before I describe it, I am the only show that is at Under St. Mark's. I think there was a scheduling complication with the podcast. So just to be clear, I am at Under St. Mark's. But Dad Girl is a comedic stand-up and storytelling show. It is a little bit of a dark comedy. And it is a show partially about me in my late 30s deciding about whether or not I should have a kid and the loss of my father when I was a kid. So the very short tagline, it kind of deals with gender and relationships and society's expectations. But the very short tagline is, can you be a dad if you grew up without one? Because I would be the dad if I had a kid. Mm. So, but fun, you know, about death, but fun.
I love it. As you can hear, listeners, we have some amazing, amazing shows to dive more into. So let's go ahead and do that, starting with a wonderful question, which is, what has it been like developing your piece? And I'm actually going to invite another voice we haven't heard yet onto that. Tanya Gupta, you're with the Leading Lady Club. Can you tell us a bit about what it's been like developing your piece?
Yeah, absolutely. So our process was really exciting because we worked with our playwright kind of in the beginning. So my co-producer, Caitlin, has had her production company, the Leading Lady Club, for a little while. And I have Guptanya Studios. And together we approached our playwright, Sarah Hogwood, and basically asked her to conduct these interviews with different women and use that as material to write the play. So we've kind of taken this really from the ground up together as a team, and it's been really exciting seeing it come to fruition over all this time.
Fantastic. Emily, I'm going to jump back to you, and I'd love to know, what has it been like developing Dad Girl?
Yeah, so I am a stand-up comic, so was born out of stand-up I was doing, and I was finding that the two topics that people were really coming up to me after just normal stand-up shows to talk to me about being relatable to them were loss, because I've always told jokes about growing up without my dad, and about that time in life in your late 30s, especially being a woman in New York or just a woman with a career and deciding, you know, am I gonna have a kid, and watching the window close. And people were kind of coming up to me at shows two drinks in being like, I just canceled an appointment to freeze my eggs. Like, what should I do? And I was like, I just met you and I'm highly unqualified to tell you. But it started that way. And then I actually finished writing the show and took it to Edinburgh last year for the full run there. So I performed it for a full month every day, and it has continued to evolve based on how that experience went. But it's just a really specific, relatable moment in my life that kind of just came together pretty easily, to be honest. You know, obviously writing a show is complicated and has its own hurdles, but it's just a very true piece to my moment in life right now. So yeah, it's been a journey.
Amazing. Jorge Perez, I would love to know what the development of your show Delirantes has been like.
Hey, thank you guys. Thank you so much. Okay, we were like, I don't know, I don't remember in this moment in pandemic together, like how many years ago?
3 years,
like
I think.
3 years ago.
Years,
yeah. Exactly. In that situation, I was with my wife and with a partner here in my apartment with an actress and director. So It was the perfect combination, but the pandemic, it was actually the situation, the big situation. So we start with that script. We start with that work from there inside the house and with the pandemic running. So it was a crazy situation. And after the time, looking for that, how can I say that, like amazing work with somebody, because my wife and me were thinking about that show in this present, but the future. Actually, in that moment, we met Brigitte. So we start to work in this place so hard, like with Brigitte, like 6 months ago. So, and now we're here. Now,
yeah, we're both from Colombia, but he was an actor there. I was an actor there. We never met.
Yeah, exactly.
And we found out each other, all of us, last year. And we were like, hey, let's do this. Actually, the show is going to be performing Spanish with subtitles. So it's pretty cool to approach the theater after a while in our language.
Exactly. Yeah. It's so exciting to be here, guys, because I'm here in New York like 8 years ago. No, a little more. So that is an amazing goal in our careers, in our life. So to be here and be part of the Free Festival. Thank you, guys.
That is amazing. I can't wait to see this show in that beautiful language. Wonderful. Eve, will you tell us about your show, Brokeneck Girls, the murder ballad musical, and the development of that?
Yes. So I am, first and foremost, I guess I'm a musician, and I was at an open mic sitting next to a girl from England. And we heard three songs in a row, sung by men, where a woman got her neck broken in the song. And this girl sitting next to me, who has this crazy English accent, went like, whoa. Well, neck's getting broken here. And I said, yeah, we should have a band and call it the Brokeneck Girls. So then the pandemic happened and we had to wait to start our band. But as soon as the lockdown was lifted, we just came out with all of these folk songs from the 1600s where women are getting drowned, shot, choked, just horrible, horrible deaths keep happening to women in these songs. There's one song called Knoxville Girl. There are 105 versions of this song on Spotify right now, and there are 100 of them are done by men. Seems like there's just a lot of songs where terrible things happen to women. So we wanted to address this because as musicians, this is kind of our community. So we made a band that does these songs. We brought in a girl named Kendra, who's on the fiddle. And then of course, you can't really do these songs without providing historical context. So we're bar singers. We started doing little skits that were hilarious about, they were sadly hysterical, but the skits kind of grew into a play, and the play allowed us to just look at the absurdity of the whole situation. And of course, like as a person of color doing country music, that has to be a part of my story because, well, a lot of people kind of wonder, what am I doing in this anyway? And people don't realize that a lot of the basis of country music is in Africa. So this is kind of a complicated way of saying that this show is sort of about the history of women, the history of color in America, but it is a comedy and about music. And I just wanted to present that and sort of talk a little bit about a fantastic experience of my life, I guess.
Wow, that's wonderful. I'd like to ask now, what is the message or thought you're hoping audiences take away from your work? And Kate, can I jump to you with your show, A Little Bit Pregnant?
Absolutely. So A Little Bit Pregnant, in the past shows that we've performed, we've had audiences laughing and crying within the same chunk of time. And we really love that reaction. It's a moving play, but it's still a comedy. And especially now with the productive rights that are so in the air in the United States, it's a show that really can relate to everybody. And we want to have a safe space for people to express themselves and to think about what's going on with their bodies and their right to choose.
Very timely, very important. That's wonderful. Hal Cantor, tell us what it is you're hoping audiences take away from your work, the importance of being anxious.
Great, thank you. Yeah, it's really, for me, on its surface, it may come across as, well, it's another story about coming out. But it's actually, I think, coming out in middle age. And one of the things I've noticed, because we've done the show in London and Los Angeles, is that anyone sort of going through any change in midlife, whatever that be, might be, that upheaval, and trying to deal with that, the fears of that, and the joys that might come from that, it's been really resonant. So I don't think of it as, you know, necessarily a coming out story, although that is a big part of the story. It's really emerged. It started out as an exploration of sexuality 10 years ago. And it's evolved into a much more mature work that's about grief. And Emily was mentioning loss. I lost someone very important to me who was my ex-fiance, and she was a Broadway baby. And it prompted me to revisit the work and gave me a new way into the work, because I had all this unbelievable anxiety. And anxiety ended up being this sort of trigger as a new way to look at this project, which initially started out as an exploration of sexuality. And it's the audience response has been really wonderful. And it seems a lot of people are relating to this idea of change in midlife. And I think that is the universal aspect of it. So hopefully it gives some insight and some laughs and some poignancy to what that journey is, which is really, really challenging when we're in middle age. And I don't think it necessarily gets talked about a lot. So yeah, that's what I'd like people to sort of respond to, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that's wonderful.
Yeah.
Heather, what is the message or thought you're hoping that audiences take away from Curry and Catharsis?
Yeah, so Curry and Catharsis, you know, in the name, where there's curry talks about a lot of flavor, a lot of color, a lot of spices. So the show is going to be spicy and talking about what is wrong with our communities. But ultimately, the catharsis is in accepting yourself, forgiving yourself for the things that have happened in the past, because all these social systems and the problems that we see in the workplace, in our communities, we cannot solve them until we accept ourselves. So we're going to laugh a lot, but at the end of the day, let's acknowledge that the spice exists in our communities, but also start by forgiving and accepting ourselves to get the work going.
That is wonderful. That's amazing. I would love to ask the whole of you, you know, with these wonderful stories, timely stories, powerful works, who do you hope have access to your show? And Caitlin, I'm going to start with you and the Leading Lady Club.
I mean, obviously, I think the hope is that anyone and everyone has access and feels seen by our show. Obviously, we're called the Leading Lady Club, but we've had a lot of feedback. We did the show also in Edinburgh at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival, and we got great feedback from the guys that would come to the show and say, you know, I also found it relatable. I also found humor in this. I also felt welcome at this show and with these stories. So we really hope it has something for everyone. But of course, more than anything, we hope the women that come see our show feel very seen and feel that their stories are being told and represented in an authentic fashion. So that's definitely who we're creating the art for, but we hope that it really has something for everyone.
Brigitte, how about you and De Laurentiis?
I mean, everyone. Oh, of course, our Spanish community in New York City to have the pleasure to go to see the show in Spanish. But most of all, everyone who went through the pandemic to go to have a big laugh and healing, understanding that we were not alone, that we went through a lot of things during that time. So I think everyone should go. We'll try to make that happen.
And we got subtitles, so that's good.
Azar, who do you hope have access to Curry and Catharsis?
Yeah, I think a very small group of people should go watch Curry and Catharsis, because if you've ever ordered butter chicken on DoorDash, you should go buy a ticket to Curry and Catharsis. And
I love that. So literally everyone needs to come out for that show. Emily, with your show, Dad Girl, who do you hope have access to it?
I mean, of course, as a stand-up and a narcissist, I think everyone should come. But I do think it is, you know, it's again, I'm sure, like your experience where you want women to come to your show, Caitlin. But the amount of adult men that came up to me in Edinburgh after the show and said, you know, I lost my dad and I haven't thought about it in that way in 10 years, or, you know, just a couple dudes came up and just gave me a hug out of nowhere. So I think it's for anybody who wants to or can laugh laugh about hard things and loss and can process things with humor and wants to try to process things with humor. But it's also, you know, it's kind of a half and half. It's also a lot about that moment in life that I feel like my generation especially is experiencing of, you know, we're not necessarily told we need to start a family, but are we going to, and what are our priorities and how do we pull that off in the timeline we're given and the economy we live in and the country that we're in. So again, I do kind of feel like it's for everyone, but I think it's especially for people who want to process loss and want to see a different side of it and a lighter side of the tougher things you can experience.
Lovely. How about you and the importance of being anxious?
Yeah, I would just say that the audience is anyone who is anxious. That's the audience, which I don't mean to say that really lightly, in that there's a lot of insight into anxiety in the play and that it may not be as debilitating as we might think it is. I've lived with it my whole life. I've medicated with it for a long time, but it's kind of a fun, humorous, lighter look, as Emily, even just like I keep mentioning Emily, this is the time I mentioned you, but there is loss in the play. There's a lot of poignancy around that. But I think we're all on so much edge right now for so many reasons, especially in this country at the moment. And I think it's really good to laugh about a lot of it. And there's a lot of laughs in the piece and a lot of poignancy in the piece. So, and then of course, there are people who are dealing with sexuality. Some people have mentioned Edinburgh. We did our show at Camden Fringe and the reaction was extraordinary, where there were some younger gay people in the audience who came out afterwards at the break afterwards and just told me their stories. I was sent emails by friends of friends in London that the play really resonated with them, who were dealing with issues, some of them trans related, for example. So, you know, even though I am, I guess, a cis male at this point telling this story, it's relatable, I think, to a lot of people. And so for me, yeah, I mean, anxiety is front and center. So come get anxious with us, is what I say, everyone.
Yeah. I love it. Steve, tell us who you hope have access to your show.
Well, the show is a comedy, so it truly is for everybody. And everybody actually really enjoyed it. But I think what was most important to me were the groups on the extremes of both sides of the aisle. It was really special to me when people of color said, thank you for doing this show. I had no idea that I belonged in history in this way. I didn't know that the banjo came from Africa. And then what was really surprising and maybe the most special was that I have sort of a group of anti-woke friends who don't necessarily feel the same way that I do. And they all came up to me after the show and said, I support everything in this show. And it meant so much that this just really appeals to everybody's humanity. I think that we touched on things that everybody can agree are meaningful and important. And there is, I don't know, there's some universal truths that apply to everybody. So it was kind of unifying that way.
So wonderful. I love that. And finally, Kate, tell us who you hope have access to your show, A Little Bit Pregnant.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you a little bit how it developed, just to start. I was studying playwriting at Concordia University in Montreal. And a professor asked us, what's the worst thing that's ever happened to you? So I thought about the time that I had stage 3 breast cancer and my dad died days before my mastectomy. And I thought, you know what? No, I don't want to write about that. And then I thought about the time that I got pregnant in my 20s. And I thought, this is a story that I can build a play around. So A Little Bit Pregnant is really open to everybody. It is a play that deals with 4 young people, 2 couples, one who does get pregnant without trying and one who's trying who can't get pregnant. And so we're really open. But what is really lovely about this play is that it hits people from all walks of life and all generations. So we have elder people who went through something like this back in the day. We have young people who are going through it currently. We got some great reviews when we played in Toronto. And the reviewer just said, like, this is my life. Like, I feel as if the actors are talking to me and these are my next door neighbors. And we really try to touch home on that. And as I mentioned earlier, it's also for people caught in the crossroads of the reproductive rights that are happening in the States right now. So we welcome all of you to come see A Little Bit Pregnant.
the second part of our interview, we love to let our listeners get a chance to get to know our guests a little bit more. Pick your brains and pull the curtain back, if you will. And I want to ask all of you my favorite question to ask guests, which is, what is your favorite theater memory? Azra, kick us off.
Yeah, I'm a late bloomer in the theater world. I didn't step into a theater until I was 26, when my friend took me to see a production of Six Degrees of Separation at a place called Actors Express in Atlanta. And so it was really scary. Like, the night before the play, the theater sent us a panicked email saying, hey, there's going to be adult content in the show. If you want your money back, you can take it back. And I was like, what did we sign up for? And we go anyway. And it was, you know, as the play ended, we were all making our way out. And I had to make way for like a wheelchair to go out. And I had to like step onto the stage to make way for the wheelchair. And in that moment, I kind of just like saw the lights in my face. I was like looking at the chairs in front of me. I was next to the props. And I, looking back at that moment now, I realize I felt the magic, but it took me six more years in my life to like find out that I was only a single degree of separation away from theater. And it was so accessible to me, but I never really made the jump to get on stage. And I think that is the beginning of my love and admiration for theater. And it kind of manifested in like the first time I got up on stage was 2 years ago, just by accident. And it's just kind of like, I'm hunting that magic over and over again.
I love that. We love a great origin story. So that's amazing. Thank you. Oh, I saw your hand go up.
Yeah. Can I share a tragic story about theater?
Absolutely.
Well, somewhat tragic, although I recovered. So we had the very first preview of The Importance of Being Anxious at Above the Stag, which is a really cool, very LGBT-friendly space in Vauxhall, which is actually now closed. But it was our first preview. The show has never been brought to life. It's been 9 years in the making. And we had a 75-seat cabaret space, gorgeous space, backlit screen. We rehearsed. We had access. We did all of our tech. And I got on the stage and I started the show on page two, which literally threw everything out of whack. And the ongoing joke after that was, well, you know, how about for the rest of the run, I start the show on page one. So needless to say, though, I really learned a lesson in that moment because I had to roll with it. It threw some of the tech off. There's a little bit of tech in this show. And it's just one of those like freeze moments. But at the same time, the audience went with me and I realized if you kind of keep doing your thing, they'll stay with you. You know, and so luckily we recovered from that. So I think it's really good. My advice to everyone is to start your show on page one. That would be my advice to all the great, wonderful artists here that we're seeing today. Start from the beginning. I know it's a crazy idea, but start from the beginning. Yeah.
Amazing. I love that.
Yeah.
Eve, what about you?
So when I was in fourth grade, my mom had this idea that I didn't have a very good sense of humor and I should take some improv classes so that my jokes would land better because I really wanted to try to be funny. So she found a local theater and asked if they had classes. And the theater said, we don't have classes right now, but we are having auditions for Alice in Wonderland. You can bring her by so she can, you know, meet the people here. So we went to the audition, forgot about it. And then a week later, I was staying with a babysitter. And the theater called and said something about the Cheshire Cat and I should come back to the theater for the play. So my mom got very excited. We were all very excited. And she called everybody she knew. She called her sisters, her parents, her work friends, my dad's work friend, everybody, and told them that I had been cast as the Cheshire Cat in Alice in Wonderland. And then we called the theater for clarification. And it turned out that it was just a callback. And And that's how I learned about pressure. That is how I learned about pressure. But the amazing thing was that I did end up getting cast as the Cheshire Cat. So I also learned that everything works out most of the time, or at least it did when I was nine. And that's my favorite story.
That is a fabulous story. I love that. Emily, what do you got for us?
Yeah, I started in theater when I was about 6 years old, and I was in plays all through elementary school and high school, but I kind of stopped when I got to later high school and college because I couldn't sing. And in my high school, you had to be in the musical to be a theater person. And So I got into scenic design, and I actually went to college for scenic design, and I've worked as a scenic artist since then. So I've worked at all these amazing places, Juilliard and the Met and Broadway and for television. And every time I go and see theater, it's hard for me to step to like fully enjoy it, because I'm looking at the scenery and I'm looking at the tracks on the ground, and I'm saying this thing's going to probably come in this way, and I can tell they're going to have four backdrops, and you know, I kind of ruin it for myself. And the first show that I saw that I didn't pay attention to that sort of thing was over 10 years ago. It was War Horse. And I remember there's a moment in the show where the stage like comes up or goes down. There's some big transition that I didn't see coming, because I was so into the story and into the puppets and into the magic of it, that it blew my mind in a way that normally I would just be like, oh, of course that happened. And I just remember being like, oh, it can still be joyful and magical. And I just need to, you know, relax a little bit beforehand, and maybe I can enjoy things.
I love that memory. Kate, what is your favorite theater memory?
Well, I grew up with my dad. Martin Levitt was a film director. So he tried getting me into the theater and television quite a few times as an actor. And it turns out I'm a terrible actor. So I had all of this special treatment. They gave me more times to go through it. And I just fobbled it up every single time. So fast forward to, I would say 40 years later, I fell into the theater by applying for the Montreal Fringe the last day before the cutoff date. And I just thought, you know what? I'm just going to try it. I have this play I've been working on. I'm going to give it a try. And I got in, and we had to put the play up together, to put the play up 2 months, not even, I think it was 1 month later. It was very last minute throw together. And so I put on Facebook an ad out and said, hey, who wants to join me? I know nothing. And we got, that's how I met my director, Rana Leo. She came and we just connected with each other, and we found our actors and our stage manager. And that's how the play came together. And I have to say, the first time that I heard my words being read by actors was such a thrill. That was one of my favorite moments. That and our first standing ovation, because I got to pat myself on the back.
Wonderful. I love that. Wonderful memory. Yes, Caitlin.
Mine is a little bit cheesy, but I will never forget my very first trip to New York City when I was probably 8 years old. My mom took me to see Beauty and the Beast on Broadway, my very first Broadway show. And I, you know, grew up in Florida, so I was a huge Disney kid. So I was so excited to see one of my favorite, you know, Disney shows on stage. And I was done for. I was like, this is what I want to do with the whole rest of my life. I was obsessed. And then fast forward, I got to play Belle in my high school production of Beauty and the Beast many years later back home in Florida, which felt really special before I, you know, started my career in theater in New York. So I always had a very soft spot for Beauty and the Beast, but I'll never forget that very first Broadway show experience was really magical as a child.
That is wonderful. What a great memory. Tanya, why don't you tell us your memory?
No. I didn't want to share it, but since you spoke about the Beauty and the Beast, a long time ago, I was doing the Beauty and the Beast for kids that were for schools. And I remember there was one day that I was a beauty, so it was very interactive with the kids, and you know, the kids, the audience, they talk, they're the best audience, because they, if you're bored, they just laugh and they don't pay attention to anything. All the kids were with me, and then I was about to go to see the Beast, so I was asking, like, should I go or not? And then this little girl come to the stage crying, and she's like, please stop, oh, Beauty, and I was just like, in the character, trying to like not break it. I was like, no, it's okay. It's gonna be fine. Like, this is okay. But she was so touched by it, and it was so beautiful to see how like kids are so like out of the like conventions of like, I have to behave this way in theater. It's just so alive, and that makes theater way more special. So that's, I remember that for the Beauty and the Beast that you mentioned. Was pretty nice and sweet and cheesy.
So wonderful. Thank you for that. Tanya, what is your favorite theater memory?
So I also am really late to the game as far as theater goes. I was an aerospace engineer in a past life. I've done a lot of different things with my life that are very STEM heavy, but I have always been very creative. And my first memory of the theater was when I won a writing contest in third grade. Every single grade had like a contest going, a competition for students to submit short stories. And the winners would be surprised by the local high school drama club that would come in and perform the short stories for each of the winners. And I didn't, of course, know that that was what was going to happen if I won, but I did. And we had an assembly in front of the entire school. They like asked my parents to come out and they like put me on a chair right in front of everyone. And then I got to witness like a bunch of much older students, you know, at that time, they seemed like full grown adults to me, performing this silly little short story about a little girl who gets her wish granted that she becomes the most popular girl in school. And it was a really amazing moment. I mean, that was the first time that I actually witnessed my art come to life. And as silly as it is, it really sparked something in me that I think I've been chasing that feeling ever since.
That's incredible. I love that story. Thank you for that. Jorge, you want to bring us home on this?
I'm thinking about that. I'm categorizing is the word, the funny moments, the funny memories or like traumatic memories about the theater or like romantic memories. So I got a lot of funny memories, but I want to share like that feeling when you find the theater, you can feel like the silence inside the place, like different, like the focus, the energy. I think that is the most important feeling in this moment that is in my head, in my body, is like a special place, like when everybody is focused, paying attention in the whole time from long time ago in my career, in my life, and right now. That is amazing, like that moment, that special moment that when everybody is in the audience, the actors, the everybody inside the theater, or is the equal with the theater alone, just the place. That's like my romantic feeling and memory right now, the same feeling that all the time. It's amazing.
That is a fantastic memory, fantastic thought. I'm with you. I love the feeling of just feeling the audience breathing together, just coming together as one, and the lights go down and it's just, you could hear a pin drop. So wonderful memory. All of you, wonderful memories. These were so fantastic. You all knocked it out of the park. As we wrap things up, I would love to now ask all of you, if our listeners would like more information about any of your shows or about you, maybe they'd like to reach out to you, how can they do so? And Caitlin, I'm going to start with you and Tanya and the Leading Lady Club.
Great. Well, I mean, definitely visit Frigid New York's website to buy tickets to all of our shows. I hope everyone will buy tickets to all the shows mentioned here because they all sound amazing. And then to reach out or find us personally, you can find more information about me and my production company at leadingladycreative.com or at leadingladycreative on Instagram. And then Tanya, you can find at
either guptanya.art or guptanya.jpg on Instagram. And my website is guptanya.com.
Brigitte and Jorge, how about you? How can our listeners get more information about your show, you, reach out to you?
Yeah, of course. Through the festival page, of course, and through Monkey Business on Instagram. This at Monkey Business, which is the company who's producing the play. Yeah, you definitely can find it there.
Perfect. Azur, Curry, and Catharsis, how can people find out or reach out?
Yeah, you can find the show on the Frigid website, but you can also follow me on Instagram. It's Azur, B-A, A-Z-H-A-R-B-A on Instagram. Thanks.
Hal, how about you?
I'm at Anxious the Play on Instagram. We are at anxiousplay.com, anxiousplay.com. And then halcantor.com is my home website, which has a bunch of stuff about me, if anyone's interested in that. Thank you again, Andrew, for hosting us. It's wonderful.
Yes. What? Kate, how about you and a little bit pregnant?
Yes. Well, here's my phone number. No, I'm just joking. A Little Bit Pregnant can be found on the Frigid website. You just search up A Little Bit Pregnant. And you can also look us up. My website is paperdogpress.com. Paper Dog Press. I'm actually a graphic novelist, so a lot of my books are on that site as well. And you can find us on Insta at the same handle, Paper Dog Press. Or if you want to be really personal, you can look me up on Facebook at Kate Levutt.
Wonderful. Eve, how can our listeners get more information about your show or reach out to you?
The easiest thing is probably our website, which is themurderballadmusical.com. The is very important. Themurderballadmusical.com. We also have a ton of social media, which is also themurderballadmusical.com. And the band also has separate social media. If you want to hear just the music, you can go to Brokeneck Girls, Facebook or Instagram.
Wonderful. And wrapping us up, Emily, if people want more information about you or Dad Girl or want to contact you, how can they do that?
Yes, I am the Funny Walsh on every platform imaginable. And you can get tickets at the Frigid website like everyone else. But remember, I am at Under St. Mark's. And if you want to check out my website for any reason, that is emilywalshcomic.com. And on that website, but also if you can't remember that or you'd like a more direct link, you can go to dadgirlshow.com and there'll be the ticket link there, as well as the reviews from when I put the show up in Edinburgh, if you'd like some more information. But yeah, I'm the Funny Walsh everywhere that you can be.
Well, wonderful. Thank you all so, so much for taking the time to speak with me and sharing your incredible works. I am so excited to be seeing these this year. So congratulations to all of you on these wonderful masterpieces. And thank you so much again for your time.
Thank you for having us, Andrew.
Thank you.
Thanks, Andrew.
Thank you.
My guests today have been several of the artists who are part of the New York City Fringe Festival. All but one of these performing at the Wild Project, our friend Emily Walsh being at Under St. Mark's. But all of these shows are currently on sale now. You have to check them out. You have to see them. Get your tickets now. The New York City Frigid Fringe Festival is running April 3rd through the 21st at three venues: Under St. Mark's, The Wild Project, and 14Y Theater. And you can get your tickets and more information by visiting frigid.nyc. If you are in the New York area, or you're wanting to come here, or you are visiting, get your tickets now. These are wonderful shows, powerful and timely works. You will not want to miss it. That's the New York City Fringe Festival, April 3rd through the 21st. So until next time, I'm Andrew Cortez, reminding you to turn off your cell phones, unwrap your candies, and keep talking about the theater.
In the stage whisper.
Thank you.
If you like what you hear, please leave a 5-star review, like, and subscribe.
You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram at Stage Whisper Pod.
And feel free to reach out to us with your comments and personal stories at stagewhisperpod@gmail.com.
And be sure to check out our website for all things Stage Whisper and theater. You'll be able to find merchandise, tours, tickets, and more. Simply visit stagewhisperpod.com. Our theme song is Maniac by Jazzar. Other music on this episode provided by Jazzar and Billy Murray. You can also become a patron of our show by logging on to patreon.com/stagewhisperpod. There you will find all the information about our backstage pass as well as our tip jar. Thank you so much for your generosity. We could not do this show without you.